Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org. Welcome to the 200th episode of Nature Now. I'm Kate Dwyer, the lead producer of this program, going on 4 years now. It's been a good long run. I've learned a lot and hope our listeners have too. As of today, I pass the conductor's baton on to Nan Evans, who specializes in marine subjects on her programs. I'll still be doing occasional shows. Today, my co-host is Owen Rowe, and our main subject will be the snow geese and swans of the Skagit Delta. But as always, we will start with this week's mystery sounds. Here's a hint, there's some kind of duck.
We always love reporting good nature news, and so we're delighted to report yet another baby orca born this winter.
Yahoo!
Yeah. The baby, christened L94, was initially spotted off Cape Lookout near Westport. The calf looked very energetic, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, reporting from a research vessel following the pod.
The L pod is the largest of three pods that make up the southern resident population. Both of the previous babies are in the J pod, which now numbers 26 orca whales. The K pod has 19. With the latest birth, there are now 35 orca whales in L pod. Go L's! If you check the OrcaNet sightings page, you'll see lots of excitement lately about a large humpback that has been frequently seen around the Edmonds area.
Although summer is months away, the season's best-known star pattern is already peeking into view in the pre-dawn sky. The summer triangle, which is marked by the stars Vega, Deneb, and Altair, stands well up in the east at first light. This month's full moon is on March 5th and is known as the Sap Moon, Worm Moon, or Lenten Moon.
Dan Wagoner of our local Admiralty Audubon reported on last weekend's annual trip to the Skagit area. Early morning, we found a flock of about 2,500 snow geese, including one dark phase. One of the objectives of our trip was to learn how to separate tundra and trumpeter swans. The tundras have smaller bills with a small yellow patch in front of the eye. The trumpeters have a canvasback-shaped head with a red grin near the base of the bill. We'll be hearing more about the differences between tundra and trumpeter swans in our upcoming interview. So, now listen to this. Well, that dramatic sound is what a huge flock of snow geese sounds like when taking off. If you'd like to see and hear this marvelous phenomenon, head over to the Delta areas near Laconner soon. My guest today via phone from Laconner is Paul DeBrien, who is a wildlife biologist with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. We'll be discussing the snow geese and swans of the Skagit Valley. Welcome, Paul.
Well, thanks, Kate. Nice to talk to you.
So why don't we start with your job? What exactly do you do?
I'm the assistant district wildlife biologist for Skagit and Whatcom County, and a lot of my job during the winter especially revolves around waterfowl and various management hunting issues, including surveys. We survey pretty much all of the waterfowl regularly throughout the winter, and that includes snow geese and swans.
In that case, what do your surveys tell you about the numbers this year? Or do you have the results yet?
The snow geese population is pretty stable. We do aerial surveys for snow geese, which consist of flying around in an airplane and taking pictures of all the snow geese that we can find. Starts up in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is the north end of where our flock of snow geese winter, and then it extends all the way down into Snohomish County around Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, the main areas for snow geese are in the Skagit and Samish Flats, and then down in the mouth of the Stillaguamish River around Stanwood.
Right. So do you separate out the numbers so you'd know how big the flock is, say, just in the Skagit Delta?
Yeah, we do. The whole flock is about 64,000 birds.
Wow. That's the whole flock in Washington State, to be clear?
No, that's all of the snow geese, including the ones up in
Canada.
Vancouver.
Okay.
Basically, the Fraser River Delta. And it looks to me like about 47,000 in the United States part of it, most of which are in the Skagit.
Okay.
A smaller number in the Snohomish around Monroe and Stanwood in the Stillaguamish River Delta.
So the snow geese down here, where do they start life out as a little chick? What's the migration and lifestyle pattern?
Virtually all of our snow geese are hatched out on Wrangel Island, which is a big island in north of Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually are Asian in origin. It's a big tundra island where they all nest in big colonies up there and spend most of the summer growing up in Wrangel Island and adjacent Siberia.
Is it true that there's sort of two groups that come down here, one that come earlier in, say, November and head on out to California, and then the others, that the big flocks that stay here?
That might be a little bit oversimplification. Birds are kind of constantly coming in the fall, and then a certain number of them do continue on down to the Central Valley of California, and for that matter, the Columbia and other places in Oregon. And then a certain amount stay, and then we've got some indications that birds are leaving to go to further south through the beginning of the winter and then coming back. So it's not just like two populations of birds. I would say, as a generalization, that some stay and some keep on going.
So in other words, they might come here twice in one season?
They might.
I see.
And we have records of that. We've had radio transmitters and bands on birds that indeed have come here and gone further south and then come back before they go north.
Right.
Generally, this migration is kind of a counterclockwise movement down the coast into the Valley of California, then up into the valleys of northeastern California and eastern Oregon, and then back up through the middle of the country, back to the breeding grounds. But there's all variations and differences
on that.
Individual birds.
Now, what about the swans? Which species are there, and where do they breed?
We have two species of swans generally here. The trumpeter swans, the larger of the two, predominantly the one you see in the various flats around here. And they mostly nest in the interior of Alaska, a certain number of them in northern British Columbia, and then in the Yukon and Northwest Territories. But by and large, most of the trumpeter swans, about 85%, nest in the interior of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have tundra swans, which used to be called whistling swans.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit smaller. They have a much higher pitched call. That's usually the best way to identify them, is by the sound of them. There are fewer of them, but they're much more widespread. So, like, for instance, in our surveys now, this year we had approximately 15,000 trumpeter swans and around 1,000 to 1,500 tundra swans.
And does that include British Columbia as well, that survey?
Very few swans in British Columbia by the time. We do our winter surveys in late January, and by that time, most of the swans are in this country. There are a few in Fraser Valley, just north of Whatcom County, and then there's some out on Vancouver Island. But
yeah, we have a few over. We have a few over here, too.
Right. There's a population, maybe 60, 70 birds out by Squim that we hear a lot about.
Also in near Chimicum in the Center Valley, we've got probably about 36. So do the trumpeters and the tundra swans intermix when you see a flock of them?
Yes and no. Because there's so many more trumpeters, there's a lot of pure flocks of trumpeters, but there are areas where they're mixed, particularly around Laconer and the Fur Island area is where, in our last survey, we found most of the tundra swans.
Okay.
The tundra swans are also much more common throughout the West, and so as spring moves along, the trumpeters will leave, and they'll be replaced by a lot of tundra swans that come up from the rest of the West and stage here, waiting for the snow to go away up north. So from now on, there will be increasing numbers of tundra swans and decreasing numbers of trumpeters.
Ah, interesting. So what makes the Delta area such an attractive environment for the geese and swans? And also, there have been reports, is it true or not, that snow geese wintering in other parts of the state more because there were limited crops of corn in the Skagit area this year? Is that true or false?
It's a little bit oversimplified, but there are a lot of changes in the way snow geese are wintering. It used to be very consistent that they all stayed in Skagit Bay and they all came in and fed on Fur Island. the crop rotation has changed. There's a lot of different cover crops, which is pretty important, particularly for the snow geese. They're grazers. And winter wheat is being replaced by some mustard, some brassicas that are not as attractive to snow geese, and that may be the reason that they're starting to spread out around our area. I mean, they certainly are not reduced in numbers, but they're not concentrated like they once were, just right in that Fur Island area.
But don't you have management practices where in certain areas you control what the cover crops are in order to attract them?
Yeah, particularly in the Fur Island area, there's a very large snow goose reserve that is sharecropped and planted for snow geese in particular, and they use it pretty well. That's the premier area, I'm sure you know, to go to look at snow geese is right down in the Fur Island area, which is in the mouth of the Skagit.
Mm-hmm. What's the crops that you use there?
Generally, winter wheat is what's planted both to protect the soil and to feed the snow geese.
I see.
And they've learned recently, actually, to feed on corn. It hasn't been that long since the snow geese have found the waste corn as a resource. They also eat a lot of potatoes. There's a tremendous amount of potatoes grown in the Skagit Valley, and they've found that they can eat those. Swans are a little bit more omnivorous, and they have been in potatoes and corn for a much longer time.
Interesting. Well, what are some of the management practices involved in the areas that you get to control, including hunting?
Hunting is pretty much the only control. I'm sure you're aware that in the middle of the country, the snow goose populations have really gotten pretty far out of control, and they do a lot of extended seasons, hunting seasons, to control the snow geese. We don't really have that problem here. The snow goose numbers here reach a certain level, and then they seem to go off to other areas like the Columbia River, the interior, like McNary around Pasco.
So it's fairly stable in Whatcom and Skagit, you're saying, the snow geese population?
Yeah, the numbers, they seem to build to a certain level, and then the birds move off on their own.
Mm-hmm. So how many hunting permits are allowed a year for the swans and the geese, do you know?
There's no hunting of swans.
No, okay.
Because the trumpeter swan is somewhat of a protected species, and they look so much like tundra swans, there's absolutely no hunting of swans allowed in Washington.
Okay.
There are some swan hunts in interior, particularly for tundra swans, but because we have both, we don't allow any hunting of swans.
Mm-hmm.
Snow goose, there's not a certain number of snow goose permits put out, but you do have to have authorization, and that is generally so we can keep track of how many snow geese are killed by hunting, and we can manage on that level. By lengthening and shortening the seasons is pretty much how it's regulated.
Oh, I see.
So if you get a snow goose permit to hunt snow geese, you're required to fill out your card and tell us how many you killed. That's pretty much the management tactic there.
Mm-hmm. So besides the crop planting and the hunting, are there any other management practices that you use?
We survey snow geese to kind of monitor their population levels. There's a lot of work being done with invasive species in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big changes in snow goose distribution is a result of a lot of invasive species that have moved in and replaced some of the native brushes that they were historically fed on.
Right. So what are those species, the main problem species?
Spartina is one I know that they spend a lot of time on.
Mm-hmm.
And it has displaced a lot of the aquatic plants that the snow geese really evolved eating here. And so that's kind of what forced them into the fields to feed on pretty much welfare human food. So all the work that the invasive species people are doing in the Delta is certainly, if not aimed at, beneficial to snow geese.
I see. Spartina is very, very hard to defeat, isn't it?
It is.
Are there other points of interest about these birds or your management practices that we haven't covered that you think we ought to know about?
They're a lot of fun to look at. I mean, there's nothing, I'm sure you guys have been out and seen them, there's nothing quite like being in a big flock of calling snow geese, and particularly when there's thousands of them around, this area is really good for that. There's other places, but this is pretty much, for Washington, it's the best place to see snow geese.
Yeah, it's awesome. In fact, I'm coming over there with Ken Wilson, and it's just as great as the Tulip Festival.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really a show. Well, that's about all the time we have for today, and I really thank you for taking the time to inform us about this. It's been really interesting.
Okay, it was fun for me.
Okay, Paul. Take care.
Now for those mystery sounds again.
That is the very familiar sound of the female mallard. Sounds like a madman laughing to me, but only the female quacks.
And that is the very different sounding male mallard. Poor quackless fellow.
About those snow geese, if you would like to go over there and you can't manage or don't want to join a group, there's some ways you can go about it. You can go to the website skagitvalley.com, and they have maps there. You just click on bird watching. You can also look at the Skagit Audubon website for tips of where people are seeing the birds. And you'd want to go pretty soon before they leave, and it is a marvelous sight. And on Saturday, March 14th, Admiralty Audubon has a field trip to the Dungeness Wildlife Refuge. See their admiraltyaudubon.org for details.
Next week on Nature Now, we have Nan Evans interviewing Wendy Feltham of the Natural History Society in what they're calling belly biology.
I love that.
That is, what you can see on the pilings around town if you get down on your belly and look. Sounds fun.
We hope you have enjoyed this eclectic, authentic program of natural history. The program repeats at 2 p.m. on Thursdays and 11:30 on Saturdays. Podcasts of recent broadcasts are available at kptz.org.
Nature Now is produced by Kate Dwyer and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer.
Closing music is Swan, performed by Right Said Fred.
Bells crash, babies cry, a thousand voices.